Good morning. Welcome to Focus 580, our talk show for the morning. My name is David Inge. Glad to have you with us. We are also pleased to welcome back to the program the man that we like to call our chef in residence, Doyle Moore. Every month on the first Wednesday, we talk about cooking. We've been doing it for a long time, and we always have a good time and exchange recipes and stories. And the way we do this is that he selects some topic. We have talked about particular dishes or things that particular ingredients, single things that can be the focus of a dish. We've talked about cooking from different places in the country and different places in the world, and loosely discuss that subject, sometimes, as I say, exchanging recipes, or people have cooking questions. We've also on the program tried to do a little troubleshooting. We have occasionally heard from someone who said, I have this recipe, I'm trying to make it, it just doesn't work. What do you think the problem is? And Doyle has tried to make some suggestions about different strategies that people could try. And this time around, his thought was apples. Let's talk about cooking with apples. And it's particularly a good time to do that since, of course, apples are available all year, but the fall is when they're picked. So that really is the best time to get them when they're just picked. So questions are welcome. Recipes are welcome. If you'd like to call in, say hello. You can do that here in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. And we have a toll-free line. That's 800-222-9455. Welcome back.
Thank you very much. Here. It's apple time.
I, as we've been talking here before we got going, I got some amazing apple facts that courtesy of the U of I Extension people. And actually, I was a little bit surprised. I knew that there were a lot of apples, but at the number of varieties. What they say is that here in the United States, there are 2,500 varieties of apples grown. And around the world, there are 7,500 varieties. So there are a lot of different kinds of apples. And they also say that apples are grown in all 50 states of the United States. Not commercially everywhere, but they grow in all 50 states. They're grown commercially in 36 states. They also say that apples are the second most valuable fruit grown in the United States. Oranges are number one, so apples would be number two. And the other thing that I thought that was interesting is that they say that apparently that most of the... I'm trying to find it here because I want to make sure that I say this correctly, but if I'm remembering, they say that most of the apples in this country are harvested. They're mostly harvested by hand. Most apples are picked by hand in the fall. So it's not a thing that it lends itself easily to doing by machine.
Students make extra money in Vermont to pick apples.
Okay. So you got to send people out there and reach up and grab the thing and pull
it
out the drink.
That's exactly it. Yeah. It's sort of like you can have all you want to eat, and they can buy some of them and take them. But apple picking is a little sideline. Remember when the Unit 1 students were with me in Vermont during the September? They made a lot of extra money by picking apples, and I had to stay home and make applesauce.
They brought you the apples.
That's right. And I cooked them. Every one.
Well, I guess it really is. You know, we try to pick things that are seasonal, and that's one reason.
That is one. Yes, the subject came to me from a listener who said, "Hey, it's apple time. Talk about apples." So I did, and I know that they're listening today.
Well, again, this would be one that I think that probably everybody, maybe almost everybody can relate to the topic, and maybe folks will have some good apple recipe that they might like to share, and that would be great.
Apples are a funny thing. You either know a lot about them or you don't know anything about them. It's kind of funny. They're either there and you use them and you don't know why except it's just blindly use them, and or else you pick select a variety and I know one friend is very fond of Yellow Delicious because that's what his father who ran an orchard. That's what he had the best of. And so then there's nothing better than a golden delicious. Yeah.
Well, I was talking about how many varieties there are, and most people probably don't have really have access to that many varieties. I don't know, here in the store, if you go in, how many different apples you might have to choose from, maybe as many as a half dozen.
Yes, we were discussing that over the phone before I got here this morning, that yes, there are these 2,000 apples grown here, but they're not all available to you in the store because grocery stores don't want to have a stock that is broad, especially when you'll buy whatever they've got anyway, then to have more than you would want and have to make a decision. Mm-hmm. And I've seen a lot of people just not know what to pick for an apple, what to select.
And I suppose it depends on what if you're just going to eat it or if you're going to cook with it. You may want it to do certain sorts of things.
Yes, but for the most part, they all do pretty much the same thing. You kind of want to get something that has more body to it. If you're going to bake it, or if you're going to make an applesauce, you want something to fall apart, or mm-hmm. you want something that holds together. All kinds of needs. But I don't think a lot of people ponder on that when they're selecting.
Maybe they just have a favorite, and maybe it's like the example with your friend.
Exactly,
it's the one that you grew up with.
It's the one
or
you grew up with.
At some point, you just they had a variety, and you said, "Oh, well, I'll try this." And then you decide, "Gee, I really like that." That's why I came across the gala, I think.
Oh,
well,
yes.
Just, you know, I don't know that I had ever really paid that much attention, and I went to the grocery store and was going to buy some apples, and they had that variety. And I thought, that looks pretty good.
Well,
and I decided,
good.
Gee, I like that. So now maybe a Gala or a Fuji.
A Fuji is my current favorite apple to have is a Fuji. And they haven't been available to us for a long time. You know, I mean, it's been a short time they've been available to us. Yeah. So one of them comes from New Zealand. I think Gala is a New Zealand apple. And I don't know where a Fuji comes from.
I guess initially I want to say, it must be Japanese, but probably not.
Fuji, it doesn't say, just worldwide. Crisp, juicy, very sweet, fragrant, but only if the green undercolor has turned creamy yellow. A good keeper, autumn, good for eating raw, sliced and baked, and for desserts worldwide. And then the Gala is also worldwide. Mm. Yeah, in fact, they sound almost identical. And they kind of look pretty identical, too. But the information is generally so vague that just buy an apple and eat it.
Well, we have someone ready to
Good.
Who would like to talk with us, a caller in Champaign, so let us talk with them on our line number 1. Hello.
Hi. Mm-hmm. I'm calling to ask if you know where a person could get an apple called a Turley wine sap.
A Turley wine sap.
Mm-hmm.
No, I don't know where that would be.
Do you know what it is?
No. In fact, I'm looking real quick here in my magic book to see if there is such a thing that is available. I don't find it in this list of, there's a Stamen wine sap grown in Virginia, Pennsylvania, and New Jersey.
Uh-huh.
No, that's the only wine sap that's in this list of this magic book.
Huh.
I don't know. However, I would call, Curtis Orchards.
Curtis Orchards.
Yeah, they're here in Champaign.
Uh-huh.
And they might either tell you that, no, they're not available here or where they are. My guess would be that because go to the source. Go to the orchard.
Okay.
They might have that information. I've never heard that name before either.
Well, it's an old.
Sort of like one of the heritage old-fashioned apples.
Yes.
I wonder. Yeah, there are a lot of people in this area that grow heritage plants and such things. I remember one of my colleagues was so proud of his Northern Spies. And I'd never heard of a northern spy, but anyway, that's what we all got bushel baskets of, was his northern spies. And he thought that was just the best thing to grow, and it grew well in this mm-hmm. area. So there again, Curtis Orchards might know of people who are specializing in heritage apples.
I'm looking at I have a computer here in the studio. I'm looking at a website I just put into my browser, Truly Winesap, and one of the places I came up here was with a website called The Apple Works, and it has a list of different varieties, and it just talks about some of their characteristics and so forth. And it does list that variety of Winesap, and in fact, it says that it originated in an orchard in Greenfield, Indiana.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a Hoosier favorite, and that's what it says. So I guess maybe if you were looking for a source for those apples, you might want to look over in that part of Indiana.
Yeah,
I
mm-hmm.
guess.
Well, there was an apple orchard over in Monticello that had them, but then after a while, he had to take the trees out because they got too old.
Oh,
and he was kind of scaling down his operations at that point. Now, I don't think he's operating anymore. I think he's probably deceased. But it was the best apple. It was so good. It had very hard, crisp, white flesh.
Mm, yes.
And extremely white. And then just underneath the skin and around the ovary part where the part where the seeds were,
yes,
there was a little red line. And the outside of the apple looked dark red with little stars all over it, little white stars. It was a gorgeous, tasty, juicy, sweet and tart.
Sounds like a favorite to me.
It yeah. was. I don't know why people, you know, wouldn't want them. So I don't know why it went out of favor and became a heritage apple. So Apple Works, what is the
well, this, it's... Okay, let me go back here to the website. It's apple-works.com. And this particular section, it lists all these varieties. It shows a picture. It tells you a few things about them. And I'm not sure if also here, it looks like they do have a store. The thing is, I guess I'm not really sure where these people are mm-hmm. located. And it looks like that they sell, things like salsa and relish and preserves and things like that.
The people that have the Turley Winesap?
Yeah, I think, well, it looks like these people are in Indiana somewhere.
Uh-huh.
And that they sell, packaged and preserved products. So it's possible that they might, it says we ship our apples UPS.
Uh-huh.
You could go there to the website, and I'm sure that you could get the information.
Find out about it.
I'm not seeing right off where, but it seems like these people must be in Indiana, someplace, and that they do ship the produce. So that might be a possibility. And then also maybe there will be somebody listening to us who's familiar with that apple and would say, oh, yes, I can tell you where to get it. So we'll see.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Well, thanks
for
the call.
All right. Bye.
We are talking this morning here with the man that we like to call our chef in residence. I'd like to point something out, ladies and gentlemen. It's purely an honorary title. You can't go down to Bed Bath & Beyond and get a discount with this thing. But we always have a good time when he is here with us. First Wednesday of every month, we always talk about food and cooking and have a good time. And the subject here of our talk this morning is the apple. So perhaps you have a good apple recipe that you'd like to share with us. 333-9455, toll free 800-222-9455. Here's the next caller, line 2 in Urbana. Hello. Yes.
Hello.
Yes.
Hi. I'm just calling to for the last caller who was looking for a particular kind of wine sap, but you also mentioned the Northern Spy. About a mile east of Monticello on the Monticello Road is a fantastic orchard called Wolf Orchard, and they're open until the 7th of November. But I was there a few weeks ago because some of my students were doing a project out there, and at that time they had 17 varieties of apples, of which about 10 were heirloom varieties. So Stamen Winesaps and Northern Spies and Red Pippins and Spitzenberg's, which is that was evidently Thomas Jefferson's favorite apple, golden russets and busks and bellflowers. And
wow.
It was really actually amazing. Also, they are very well-informed people and love to have you taste the apple. So the first time I was out there, I had a taste of every single apple, and to be able to do that was really quite remarkable. My students then, these three students, for one of their projects, made a single pie for each of the available varieties of apple.
Mm-hmm.
And anyone who happened by on that Saturday could have a piece or a taste or whatever they'd like. So in one area you could taste the apples and buy them. In another area you could have a piece of pie. It was really quite a great day, I have to say. But I highly recommend them. They're about a mile east of Monticello on the Monticello Road. And they're open until the 7th of November. And some of those varieties they're running out of. I mean, golden russets are gone and all. But the others were there last time I was there. It's a wonderful place.
And tell us again, is it wolf, like the animal wolf?
It's wolf, like the animal, but with an E at the end. So Wolf Orchard.
Oh, a W-O-L-F-E, Orchard.
That's right, exactly.
Okay.
Yep, and there's a sign along the Monticello Road there. So, and they're not far off that, to the north of the road.
All right. Well, that's great. It's the Wolf Orchard on Monticello Road. It's a mile east of Monticello.
Exactly.
And people can check
wonderful
it out.
Wonderful spot.
Great.
Yeah. Thanks.
Bye-bye. Well, thanks very much for the call. We appreciate it. I'm sure that there are other people who grow apples within the sound of our voice. So we don't want to just say, you know, this is the only place to go. You know, you should investigate the various places. But it sounds as if you're interested in trying some of the kinds of apples that exist, but you can't go down to the Schnucks and buy one of these
exactly.
things.
Exactly.
That's what you've got to go and find somebody.
I was sort of having a fantasy of thinking about these 10 or 12 students making a pie out of each kind of apple, and I was facing a decision myself of, which one do I say yuck and which one do I say yay? I mean, an apple pie is a wonderful, wonderful object, and I can't imagine one not being good. So I'm afraid I would have to eat all 12 of them.
You'd have to have
And then I don't know that I could make a decision.
After a while, I think it might be kind of hard. You'd forget when you're about to number 6, you'd think, now, wait a minute, what was number 1?
Yes, exactly, because each one would be so consummate in itself, it would crowd out all the others.
Yeah, okay. Well, let's go on. We'll talk with somebody else. And the next person, I believe, would be line number 3 in Champaign. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
I was just wondering if you've ever heard of a banana apple.
A banana
apple.
No.
My brother used to have a big orchard in southern Illinois. And that was one of the varieties that he had, just one tree of that.
Oh, a banana.
And it really tastes kind of like a banana in an apple mix.
I was kind of thinking you might have had a common name for the pawpaw, which is called a custard apples, but it was a regular apple.
It was a regular apple.
Oh, a banana.
But for some reason it had that banana flavor.
That's unusual. Did they do anything special with it? I mean,
he just grew it. Tree like that,
uh-huh.
You know, because he had some odd apple trees with the others. He put out over 1,000 gallons of cider every year.
Oh, my, yes.
And he said the secret to good cider is you use several varieties of apples.
Oh, so it's a mixture, yes.
Yeah, because then, you know, you get the sour apples and the sweet ones, and it just comes out lots better and not bland.
That's interesting to know that you can do mixtures that way, yeah.
But what I really called up for, have you ever tried putting an apple in your mashed potatoes? One apple for 3 potatoes. It is delicious.
Not until last night.
Oh, really?
Well, I was watching Alton Brown, and he was doing mashed potatoes.
Mm-hmm.
And he was putting mixtures of things into the mash. And I had never heard of including odd mixtures inside mashed potatoes, but he had about 4 different things that he would put into mashed potatoes, and I believe cooked apples was one of them.
A turnip, one turnip to about every 3 or 4 potatoes is real
good. A turnip and potatoes, mother cooked that a lot. Yes, she did. She did cook turnips and potatoes. the turnips spiced the potatoes, and the potatoes cooled down the turnips. I remember that was quite frequently done. And with salt pork. Mm-hmm. She cooked that with salt pork. But
when you add those things to mashed potatoes, people realize there's something different. They can't figure out what.
And they can't figure out why. I think that we've just gone through this big explosion of garlic mashed potatoes, you know. That's new and exciting to a lot of people.
And sometimes if I don't have any apples, if I have applesauce, I'll put some applesauce in the potatoes, mashed potatoes.
Oh, all right.
And that gives me almost the same flavor.
Yes, yes.
I enjoy your program.
Well, we have fun. I'm glad you do.
We appreciate the call.
Okay.
Well, so tell me, with the mashed potatoes with the apple in there, does that obviously, you taste it and you think there's apple in here, or is it harder to, you know, there's something different about it, but it's harder to pin down unless you didn't tell somebody.
If it had chunks and so that you could discern a chunk or a texture, you would be aware that I'm eating something different. Mm-hmm. But if it's mixed up and if it was like an applesauce, which is the same texture as mashed potatoes, then it would be more evasive. Mm-hmm. It would disappear for you, but you would know that something was different.
Okay, let us talk.
Sprinkle bacon on top of it.
Okay, that's we're getting kind of, you know. Well, never mind. Let's go to line number one in Urbana. Hi.
Hello. I have been looking for an apple crisp recipe that will stay crisp. Is there any secret to keeping apple crisp crisp?
I was pondering about apple crisps as I walked into the studio today, because I was thinking about all of those things that are with all those funny names that you know,
we talked about when grunts.
Oh, we had grunts and slumps,
Betties and
Betties,
Doughties,
and I was trying to say, now what is it? Because somebody will want to know the difference of it. I think that the crisp is probably the one that uses oatmeal, and oatmeal, if it's sprinkled on top, and you gotta have something more with it, flour. Will flour adds, and then brown sugar, I think, instead of white sugar, and probably a goodly amount of sugar into that will make kind of a caramel, and the caramel will harden, and that might be a crisping advantage rather than something that would turn into something more mushy. So my guess is an adequate amount of brown sugar. I have a recipe here for apple pecan cranberry crisp, and I see that they're only using a fourth of a cup of brown sugar. And so that's not a whole lot, but some pecans and butter. 6 tablespoons of butter is quite a bit, but that might be, again, something that you have to put together to make a more of a paste. I don't know what you would add. It's only a fourth of a cup of irregular rolled oats. I should think you could put some other things in it. Some rolled spelt would be good, but I don't think that would be any more crisp. I believe probably, let's see, the oven's only 375. That's more than a 350, but less than 400. It might be a matter of heat.
You think maybe overcooking it?
I should think that 375, as I say, is pretty. Well, no, apple pies are 400, aren't they, sometimes? So I don't see any clues in this recipe that would make it more crisp.
Okay.
However, there's something that somebody was making a crisp the other night, and I believe what they did was to not thoroughly mix everything, and somehow it turned into a hard crust on top, and everyone was very excited about this very crisp crust that was hard. My guess would be more liquid and maybe a little more flour, like a biscuit with a heavy crust on it. But when they fluffed it up and mixed it up, they didn't. It wasn't smooth. It wasn't a smooth, dense It was big crumbles, and the crumbles had holes in it, and the heat would get down into the holes. I remember them making an issue of that. And the feature when the people tasted it was that it was exceedingly crunchy. So it may be a matter of the texture of what you end up on top, and then don't mash it down so that it becomes like a hard pavement. I think that the secret of that was holes that sort of went all around inside this crumble. And I think it's on pretty heavy. It's not just the slightest bit on top because, you know, the apples or whatever you would be using, the juices would get up in there and soften the bottom. So probably another secret bit of it would be to have at least 3/4 to an inch of stuff on top rather than just maybe 1/4 inch. So maybe adding a lot more would make a difference.
Good. Thanks
so much.
So that it
sticks together and there's a lot and then it is baked and so it's by itself rather than mixed in with other things.
Sounds good. Thank you.
Right. I think that might do it.
Good luck.
Okay.
Thanks for the call. We're a little bit past the midpoint here.
Oh, my.
It is the first Wednesday of the month, and for a long time it has been our tradition to talk about cooking on the program with this guy that we call our chef in residence, Doyle Moore, and we pick something to talk about. Sometimes, as is the case with the show, it's a particular, you know, ingredient to focus on. He said, well, because it's fall and it's apple time, let's talk about apples. And then...
And a caller asked for it.
And a call. Well, that's it. And we have a lot of the shows that we have done have been because someone has said, gee, why don't you do this? Talk about this thing. So, apples, cooking with apples. And one of the things that we always do on these programs is, you know, trade recipes. So maybe you have a good apple recipe that you'd like to suggest or something else apple related you'd like to talk about. That's great. 333-9455, toll free 800-222-9455. We have a number of callers. The lines are full, as a matter of fact. And the next person up is in Danville on line 4. Hello.
Good morning, young man.
Yes, good morning. I was taken aback.
At the being addressed as young men.
I think I'm older than both of you. Maybe not. But you're talking about apples. It's another one of my favorites.
Oh, good.
I used to take care of my grandparents, and they had trouble getting certain foods down their throat. So now when it came to a cobbler, I finally found out that if I baked cook the apples with the requisite spices and so forth, and then bake the, let me get this right. Cook the apples, all the spices, and then make a paste with cornstarch, and then make the juice extremely thick.
Oh, yes.
Yes. And then either... make pie shells or buy pie shells, but I've now found out that the ones you find next to the biscuits at the store, they're the best. You put them on cookie sheets, and then you want to use white sugar. Brown sugar will ruin your pots and pans. You can't cook them too well like that.
Mm.
And then the cinnamon, mix it both on the shells and let them cook about 8 minutes high. And then take them out. And, of course, you're going to let it cool off.
Cool them off, yeah.
And then put your apples in whatever container you're going to put them in, and then break up the pie shells and put them in there. And this is a cobbler that's not gooey.
Because it's already baked and crisp,
yeah. It seems like to me there's an old recipe for that. It has a name, but I can't remember. And then also I found that with... sometimes pie shells just don't cook right there. I can't stand the gooey pie shell.
No.
So what I do is a hot oven, like 400, take strips of foil and put it around the fluted edge, then take a fork and prick, you know, the bottom of the pie shell.
Right, so it doesn't puff up.
Right, and put them in about 5 minutes or so, then take the strips off, then fill the pie shells, then bake them.
Then bake it, yes.
Okay, now this pie shell is flaky. Delicious. And this would go for any kind of food, really.
That would work fine, yes.
Yes, yes. I just had to tell, because I know there's some people out there who have a little trouble with that gooey dough.
That's very good. Well, thank you very much for your help.
Okay, thank you.
Yes.
All right,
bye.
Very good.
That's a good clue on you see the edges of the pie, the fluted edge around bakes at a different rate than the flat bottom that's got a piece of metal onto it. It cooks differently. So you put that aluminum foil around there and the radiant heat doesn't strike it. Mm-hmm. And so the rest of it bakes faster. It bakes at its speed, but the crust around the edge is slowed down. That's a very good way of keeping from burning it.
Yeah.
Because it's up in the air and it's getting all of this heat around it. That's a good idea.
Yeah. I'm sure I've seen devices, metal, like a rim, a metal ring.
Yes.
That's the size of the pie.
Yes.
That's made. I suppose you could do the same thing just with foil. You don't have to go out and buy a special thing. But I think there actually are things that, and you just sit it right on top of the, it just rides the rim and protects that
and protects
part of the crust
from
burned.
More, all the extra heat.
Yeah.
But I think that's an interesting idea to take the crust that you like and crumble it up.
Mm-hmm.
Can you imagine what that texture would be?
Mm.
That'd be rather nice. And you wouldn't have to leave it in too long because it's already cooked. And the rest of the pie filling that she described was already prepared and cooked. So that would just be a little matter of sort of letting it settle down a bit.
Yeah.
Oh, I like that. It's new information.
All right. On to another caller. This person is in Champaign County and line number 2. Hello.
Hello. Going back to the Stamen Winesap discussion, Grissom Orchard near Greenup had Stamen Winesaps a month ago.
Uh-huh.
I don't know if there are any left at this time, but I definitely prefer Grissom's to Wolf's. I have tasted them both.
Uh-huh.
The best tasting apple is Ashmead's Kernel. And it's an apple that improves as it ages. And it just has wonderful flavors. And it's a good eating apple along about Thanksgiving.
Yes.
And the old literature said that it was even better in January and February. I can't keep them around long. I'd like to add sort of a note as far as recipes are concerned, since we're getting back to recipes after discussing just apples for a while. I like to add applesauce in with the filling of apple pies.
Oh, put applesauce in a homemade one or a
homemade applesauce.
Uh huh.
And then when you serve it, you make a syrup from apple cider.
And, all right.
And have ice cream with apple cider.
Okay, syrup, so that would be a topping then
as a topping. Yeah.
Uh huh. Uh huh. That sounds very interesting.
It's
because
decadent.
One of my friends told me of taking a concentrated apple juice that comes in a can somewhere on the not a frozen one but one on the shelf, and reducing that almost 2/3,
yeah,
so that you end up with a very strong concentrate of apple juice, and use that to pour over the pie as you're going to bake it, because that seems to add an amazing instant heavy taste to the apples. Therefore, apples that you don't think are very flavorful all of a sudden take on a new flavor.
Have a brighter flavor.
Yes, yes. So I can understand how that might work. Sounds good.
It's wonderful. Good show. I enjoyed it.
Oh, thank you.
Very good. Thank you for the call.
Bye.
Let's go on to Urbana, line number 3. This will be the next person. Hello.
Hi. In this month's Nutrition Action, in their product section, they have a whole wheat ready-made pie crust that they're touting, and it says it's really tasty and flaky and healthy. It's made with whole wheat, flour,
yes,
canola or soybean oil, purified water, and sea salt. Those are the only ingredients. They're called Mother Nature's Goodies.
That sounds rather interesting because that's not an easy thing to make is a crust with whole wheat.
Mm-hmm. And it says it's not heavy or chewy or mushy.
Huh.
I haven't tried it. This issue just arrived. I haven't looked for it in any of the stores, so I don't.
I haven't seen it either. I don't know about that.
Other thing that I really like with apples is a utensil that I have that my mother-in-law introduced me to. I never knew about it growing up. And I'm surprised at the number of people who look at it and say, oh.
What is that?
It's an apple slicer, corer. And
an apple slicer and corer.
Right, all in one
circular
thing. It makes 10 slices. It's a circular piece of plastic or metal, and in the middle, these cutting blades radiate toward the center with another hole that goes around the core. And you press down on it over the apple, and it takes some effort, but you get the apple already sliced. You can make them...
And in perfect slices.
Mm-hmm.
And then you cut all of those in half, so they're like half moons, and you have a beautiful, beautiful pie, don't you?
Yeah, or you can do whatever, but it takes a whole lot less time if you're trying to produce something quickly, or if you have a lot of apples that you want.
I have seen this tool used, and here in town, one of my baker friends has that tool. It's just remarkable because you're up there, you're zip, 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 and you got all these perfectly, perfectly made, all exactly alike apples, and then when you spread that around in a tart, it is a beautiful sight. That's interesting. I didn't know that they were not, I didn't know you could just buy one. I thought you sort of had to have the secret hand grip of a professional baker to get one.
No, I've seen them in hardware stores. I've seen them at, I think, the Art Mart. I've seen them at Target.
I see.
I don't know what it is. Cause you look at it and think, I don't know what that is.
I don't know what it is. Yeah, it's a little bit different from just the regular apple peeler.
It's worth spending a little bit more for one. Don't get the cheapest one because the ones that are nice and heavy last longer.
Uh-huh.
The other thing you were going to look for me was a recipe for poisson d'avril. In this case, it's apples used in the springtime. It's a pastry, a large pastry, that I saw years ago in Brittany in April. And that's
uh-huh.
what they're called, Fish of April. And the pastry, I imagine it's probably puff pastry, forms the base, and they cut it in the shape of a big, fat fish. And they make the head sort of solid pastry. And there might be some filling in there. I don't know. And then they use the apples as scales.
On the outside, yeah.
Yeah, on the body of the fish. And we were camping and we had little kids and there was no way I was going to buy a whole one of those for two adults because it was a big pastry. And I'm just curious what they might have put in there that might have been hiding under the apples. Do you think that it might have been just apples?
It could have been more apples. I doubt if it was anything more complex than apples. Maybe a different fruit would be added, like maybe a plum or a dried dried apricot or a dried pear to give a different texture to the inside. This sounds an awful lot like a schubiak, the fish that is covered up with puff pastry. So I would guess that the puff pastry might be a pretty good answer to that.
Well, I was wondering whether they, you know, I've heard of pastry cream, you know, sort of a cream filling.
Oh, yeah.
Is that likely to be?
No, I wouldn't think so. Those would, because that's too fragile. And by that, I mean, if you've got this great big object, you know, that sounds more like the heft of a strudel or something, I think you would want something more than a cream. A cream would be something that would be much smaller. The things that have creams in them are generally smaller, like eclairs and cream puffs and little smaller things. If you have something as big as this, I think you're going to want some bulk to it. I would vote for two different manners of apples, the outside one being the scales and the inside one just being something more tasty.
And then what would you do on the apples? Would you melt some jelly and make a glaze. That's what people do. I've never tried this, but one of these days I'm going to. It's only taken me almost a quarter of a century.
I think that you're quite right in thinking of putting a glaze on it, because you see this comes out to be kind of like a, what is it? It starts with a T. Is it tatin or tar? I think it starts with a T.
You're thinking of the tart tatin?
Yes.
I've seen Jacques make them.
Yes, and he always puts a glaze on the outside mm-hmm. and has all these apples, and then shapes a crust to a shape that he wants, either square or just folded in and lopped over.
Just to hold the stuff.
Just to hold
a border
it.
To hold
just
the
to
stuff
hold it
in.
I think mm-hmm. that would be quite possible. I like apricot jam to do that, although a orange marmalade would be awfully good.
Mm-hmm. Thanks.
Uh-huh.
Okay. Thank you very much. We have about maybe 5-6 minutes left.
Mercy.
And a couple of callers, and we'll go next to someone in Savoy on line one.
Hi.
Hi.
My recipe was brought on because I went out to be with my sister and brother-in-law while he was going to open-heart surgery. He also has a problem of diabetes, and they use fructose, and I use that in my regular apple pie.
Oh, yes.
And it was so nice to know that people that I know, my brother, that have this adult brought on diabetes that
yes.
can have fructose, I can make sweets and they can eat it.
I've not cooked with fructose. How does it come?
Great. I mean, I was skeptical at first, and I said, okay, this is going to be good or bad. And I cooked with raw sugar one time.
Yes.
And that's really bad.
That's not going to do it. No. No, fructose.
But they have a formula on the side of the box. It's a little more expensive than cereal, but I've not figured it up yet. Like, for a cup of sugar, I would use 2/3 a cup of fructose.
I see. Okay, so it isn't.
It's a nice thing to know.
It isn't a one-to-one. No, now, what is there a brand of this?
This just says fructose all across the top.
Huh.
And I haven't really checked, but I was getting ready to make one for our friend here in town.
Yes.
Now that I've tested it out in
yes.
Virginia. So. That would be nice.
I want to do that. I have the same problem. So I have not used fructose to cook with.
Well, you'd have to be the one. I have a niece that probably can't use it. I don't think she can use fructose. So it'd have to be allowable in your diet. And in my brother-in-law's, he could have fructose.
I see. I know that somebody on the radio the other day said, you know, okay, all of this, fructose, sucrose, glucose, all these things are all sugar, so they're all sugar. Be careful of them. But I'm going to pay attention to this. At least I'll see what it looks like.
Yeah.
Good. Well, thank you.
You're welcome.
All right. Let's go on to someone here, patient on a cell phone, line two. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
I don't know if anybody else brought it up, but the best apple pie that I make that I found on a recipe was half a cup of apple cider added to it and 2 tablespoons of orange juice with 1/3 cup of brown sugar.
Oh, orange juice and brown sugar, yes.
But apple cider gives it a little more zip.
And now that isn't necessarily cooked down.
That's just
as it comes.
Apple cider, orange juice,
and brown sugar. That sounds nice and rich.
Well, the apple cider gives it a little, a zing to it.
Yes.
It doesn't have. Now, the apples, on a blind test I read once, I think it was in Kimball's magazine or cookbook, that he said on a blind test they found that a mixture of Macintosh and Granny Smith apples were the best on blind testing. And the reason was the flavor of the Macintosh, they're mushy, but the Granny Smith gave texture.
Texture, yes, they're more solid.
Right.
And a little bit sourer, and so they kind
that's
of
right.
making so, that, yes.
That's one that I think the apple cider is what gives the what makes it interesting to me, but anyway.
That matter of cider and in America is a real puzzle. We call it cider. The rest of the world doesn't.
The rest of
the world would call what we call cider, excuse me, they would call it apple juice.
Yeah, because they would talk about a harder product.
Because it's not fermented or changed into something. Boy, you buy cider in England and you don't drink a whole lot of it.
That's right.
It's very, very strong. I was most surprised because I saw, oh well, it's just going to be apple juice like you get out here. That's just apple juice, but that seems to be an American nomenclature, and so you're using regular
apple is a cider you buy here.
The cider you buy here, exactly.
Right.
So keep that in mind. don't try to cook this in England.
No.
That's good.
Okay.
Apple cider and orange juice and brown sugar. That would make quite a mixture.
Yeah.
You know, I think you could almost, if you got clever, you could almost put in a little bit of blackstrap molasses, about one tablespoon blackstrap molasses, and you'd have a very unusual flavor. I've been thinking, because in the top of my mind, I'm very, very fond of chutney. And while we were thinking about adding things to things, mm-hmm. I should wonder if homemade chutney wouldn't be a good additive to an apple pie. It would almost change it to mincemeat. I mean, you know, to that involved flavor of mincemeat. And I'm going to look into putting a homemade chutney into an apple pie and seeing what kind of a product you'd get out of it.
Well, that's interesting. Or if you didn't like that, you could omit those. Say if it had onion in it, you could say, well, maybe I don't want to have onion in my apple pie, and you could just, you know,
I think I want onion.
You want
onion
in your apple pie. Okay.
Because they're sweet and they have a texture that's quite desirable. Mm-hmm. I mean, just the idea, because people have been mentioning putting two combinations of things together. And I generally think, hey, an apple pie, you put apples in it and that's it. But all of a sudden, hey, now wait a minute. If Alton Brown can put mixtures into his mashed potatoes, I think I could work up some things with apples.
Feel free to play with your food.
Exactly. All that's right. Exactly it.
We're going to have to stop. I'm sorry. We have one more person we can't take. We've just used time. We will say thank you very much. And
yes.
We'll do it again next month.
We'll do something.
That would be December, wouldn't it?
It'll be December.
Oh, my. All right. Doyle Moore, he's the man we like to call our chef in residence once a month on the first Wednesday at 10 o'clock. He stops by, and we talk about cooking and always have a good time.